Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent.
Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Vero-Law.com. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez from Vero, and today our guest is Elizabeth Johnston, attorney at Vero. And today we're discussing the infamous work party and ways in which employers can offer employees a good time without opening themselves up for liability at every turn. Welcome, Liz, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, Tani.
I am really excited for today's topic because I really think that the work party tells so much about a company's culture. And when I hear stories about what different companies have done, I think it really speaks volumes as to things that they want to highlight in their workforce, things that they really value. But I know in every single situation, limiting liability is at the forefront of their mind. So Liz, I'm really excited to hear some of your thoughts on this topic. And for those of our listeners who haven't had the pleasure of hearing from you before, can you give them a little bit of background about yourself and what you do at Vero?
Sure. So I am an attorney in Vero's Employment and Labor Group. My practice really focuses on all things employment law, whether that be wage and hour issues, discrimination and harassment issues, issues associated with leaves under state law and federal laws like the FMLA, really all things employment. I also do practice litigation as well, and I am currently licensed in Maine, so I practice before Maine, state, and federal courts, and that's a significant part of my practice at Vero.
Perfect. You know, one of the things that I find so interesting about this topic is that our goal is that we will only ever have to advise clients on this topic, but in some cases, we'll have to litigate. And when we see situations in which holiday parties or parties in general play a role in a piece of litigation, oftentimes it is difficult because when we have our party hat on, we oftentimes don't have our litigation hat on, which means that we're not, you know, paying very close attention to the who, what, when, and where's. Our memory recall is sometimes a little clouded. That may or may not be because alcohol was involved in the situation. But really, my goal in today's show is to help listeners understand not just holiday parties specifically, but other risks that are associated with employee gatherings outside of the workspace. So Liz, your expertise kind of in this area is something that I'm really excited for us to hone in on and share that knowledge base with our listeners. So with kind of that opening, I want to jump right into it because I feel like every rock we lift up, there's just going to be this other hidden liability. So I think we probably could talk about this for a long time. Let's start with a foundational question, though. As an employer, right, so it does my company, can it legally host holiday parties? Because I feel like we're at this point in time in our culture in which maybe holiday parties just aren't something that we should even be considering, but can we still legally host holiday parties?
So fortunately, the answer is yes. Employers are welcome to throw holiday parties for their employees, just like they're welcome to throw other social gatherings throughout the years for their employees. And that's great, right? Because as you mentioned, holiday parties can be a lot of fun and there's something people look forward to. And it's a great way to, you know, provide, you know, a social outlet for your employees at the end of the year. There are definitely some risk factors to be aware of, though. Specifically, the risks that I would want to talk about would be, you know, wage and hour risks, risks from a discrimination perspective, a harassment perspective. Even workers' compensation issues can come into play at holiday parties or any sort of out of work event. These are all things that employers should be keeping in mind when they're planning and actually hosting the party.
It's interesting because when I thought party, in my mind, there were two specific categories that I was thinking about, and that was more the discrimination and harassment stuff. So I find it really interesting that you've brought in wage and hour and also workers' comp as things that are important. And I'm definitely going to want to dig down into that more, because not something that initially I would say like, oh, holiday party, let's talk about the wage and hour concerns. You know, we're not talking about it, you know, should this category be exempt or non-exempt? We're really talking about trying to have a good time. So that's going to be really interesting kind of for me to learn more about. But with all of these topics, let's try to divide it up into different risks. So let's start with discrimination. You mentioned discrimination would be a concern. What type of discrimination concerns should employers be mindful of in planning a holiday party?
Sure. So I think a big one with holiday parties in particular is going to be religious discrimination issues, because that can be a particularly tricky area during the holiday season, especially when holidays are, you know, linked to religious holidays. Now, you know, as a private employer, the rule is you may not discriminate against employees on the basis of their religion. And as part of that, it means you can't require employees to engage in or attend any sort of religious practice or exercise. So I do want to clarify also that when we're talking about this, I'm talking about private employers generally and not necessarily religious employers. Those are a little bit different rules. But for a regular private employer, where this gets sticky is if you have a holiday party associated with a specific holiday, whether it be, you know, the company's Hanukkah party or a Kwanzaa party or a Christmas party. You know, we use terms like that, but when we do, a group is, you know, bound to be excluded or feel pressured to participate in an event which now has, you know, an explicit religious overtone to it. Now, whether the party itself is so religious that it would actually create liability for a discrimination issue, that's going to be a factual question for an administrative agency or a judge, but we don't want to get to that point. And so your best bet here would be to avoid linking your holiday party to a specific religion or showing any preference for one or the other.
Does it matter the timing of it? So like if I have it the week before Christmas, or if I have it on Kwanzaa, or if I have it during one of the days of Hanukkah, is there any argument that can be made that if I have a holiday party on one holiday, but not on another holiday, that I'm showing either some preference or some disrespect?
I think the issue with that, Tawny, would be that certain employees might not be working on those days. So if you have a party that's taking place on a holiday where some employees might be taking the day off to observe the holiday, that can potentially be an issue if they can't participate because the party's taking place on that day. So it is important to look at the calendar, find those dates, and keep those in mind when you're planning.
That's a really good point. So like, figuring out the date sounds like it potentially is going to be one place where we're going to be mindful. What about decor decorations? Does that matter, you know, as I'm planning or as my party committee is planning things out? Does it have to be, you know, all, is it just streamers without any other additional kind of shows of the season, or could I have a Christmas tree?
Yeah, so decor and decorations do matter. You know, if you think about it, it's something that employees are going to see and interact with at the party. It might even be more important than just what the party is called, right? But as with, you know, party themes, party names, I would recommend trying to keep decor on the more secular side and avoid symbols that are outrightly religious in nature. And the reasons for this are really twofold. One, of course, is avoiding fuel for a religious discrimination claim, like we talked about above or earlier. And two is going to be, you know, keeping things neutral helps support a more inclusive work environment. Whereas if we're putting up decorations associated with one religion and not others, it might isolate those who don't identify with that religion with which the decor relates to. So you might be asking, well, if I can't put up religious symbols, does that mean I can't, you know, put up Christmas decorations? The good news here, though, is that courts have actually found that decorations like Santa Claus or reindeer, lights, wreaths, those are more secular in nature. So I think you'll still have plenty to decorate with.
That's really helpful, kind of to understand where the line is, because I think for a lot of people, it's become more difficult and more of a gray area in knowing, okay, what's secular and what's non-secular. For our listeners who are just joining us, you're listening to the HR Power Hour radio show. I'm your host, Tani Alvarez, and today our guest is attorney Elizabeth Johnston, and today we're discussing the holiday office party. How to put your party hat on and build morale while simultaneously limiting liability for your organization. So, Liz, we've talked about decor and decorations, which I think on most party planners' lists is important. And we've talked a little bit about date. If we're working to make the holiday party inclusive, you know, we talk a lot right now, especially about diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we want to make sure that the holiday party is inclusive. You mentioned the date, making sure that people can attend. But does this mean that we need to acknowledge all possible holidays, even if no one in the office celebrates that holiday?
You know, I think while that's really well intended, I would say it's not necessary to avoid a religious discrimination claim. And practically speaking, there are so many different religions and belief systems that it might be difficult to cover all of the bases, right? And because religion's a protected category, we might say, well, what if we want to celebrate what people here actually celebrate? Because it's protected, though, we wouldn't want to ask employees about their religious beliefs to make sure that those are being celebrated. I think your best bet here to be inclusive and create that inclusive work environment is to focus on not excluding employees rather than trying to cover all bases with all religions.
I think that's a really good point. I can only imagine the Quizlet or the Survey Monkey that goes out and says, what is your religion? I think that definitely that's going to get us into a lot more trouble than kind of maintaining a more secular celebratory atmosphere more generally. You know, one of the follow-up there, though, is when we're talking about holidays and holiday parties, one of the things that I've been hearing a lot more from companies about is if you as an organization normally send out holiday cards, are there things that they should be mindful of in sending out those greetings? I mean, it's not directly related to the party itself, but when we're talking about festivities, I think it kind of comes hand in hand with that.
Definitely. I'd say a lot of what we talked about would be relevant here, too. Just like an organization's employees, clients or other recipients of greeting cards are going to have their own religious preferences. So I would say it's important for an organization to be mindful of how they're portraying the organization publicly. There might not be quite the same risk of a discrimination suit from someone outside the organization, but more and more often, like you mentioned, we're finding that clients and other third parties are putting an emphasis on inclusivity. So it's something to keep in mind when you're doing your holiday cards.
It's interesting because I'm sure we have some listeners who for the last 10 minutes have been thinking to themselves, wait a second. Okay, Tani and Liz, like I hear everything you're saying, but I'm doing something above and beyond. Here I am hosting a party. There's no law that says that I have to have a party. I'm doing it out of generosity, out of the goodness of my soul. I don't have to give out bonuses. I don't have to give out holiday gifts. I don't have to do a party, but I'm doing so because I think it's the right thing to do. How can something that I don't have to do, but I'm doing to like be a good person also create risk? Don't I have a defense that my employees aren't entitled to a party so I can make sure that it's whatever I want it to be, not what kind of a larger, what the law says it should be?
Yeah, unfortunately, no. If an employer is choosing to have the holiday party or any work event, social, you know, inside the workday or outside, they're going to be subject to the laws that apply. So there's certainly ways to mitigate risk, you know, as we're talking about today, that are associated with those events. But if you are choosing to have those events or give those gifts or bonuses, you do still need to be mindful of what your obligations are as an employer.
We talked a little bit about kind of the date of the party and we talked about the decor, but let's talk about the location briefly, right? So you said that, like, I still have these obligations under the law for it to be non-discriminatory. But does it matter if I have the party at my home? Let's say I bring everyone to my house, then isn't it not work-related if it's outside of work hours, it's at my home, and I just invite all of my employees? Am I still going to have the risk that it's found to be a work event and that discrimination could occur there?
Absolutely, potentially. The location isn't necessarily a determining factor of whether there's going to be liability or whether you have to comply with the other employment laws. The focus is really going to be on, is this an event related to work? Is this a work-related event? And that's going to matter for the wage and hour issues we'll talk about, the workers' compensation issues we'll talk about, as well as liability for discrimination and harassment. So the venue itself isn't going to be determinative of those issues.
And with that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Educational HR Radio is critical to your organization's success, and our sponsors understand the value this program brings to owners, C-suite professionals, and the HR community. We are honored and thank our sponsoring law firms of Verrill, Sheehan Finney, Jackson Lewis, and McLean Middleton. Our partner sponsors of Healthcare Purchase Alliance and Strategic HR. Want to be a sponsor of the HR Power Hour? Text 603-303-6124 and say, we want to be an HR Power Hour sponsor.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Adopt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager, Learning the Lingo.
Today I'm going to help parents translate teen slang. Now, when a teen says something is on fleek, it's exactly like saying, that's rad. It simply means that something is awesome or cool. Another one is totes. It's exactly like saying, totally, just shorter. As in, I totes love going to the mall with Becca. Another word you might hear is jelly. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will think you're, rad, just the same. To learn more, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is Elizabeth Johnston, labor and employment attorney at Verrill. And today we're discussing the infamous work party and ways in which employers can offer employees a good time without opening themselves up for liability at every turn. I mean, this is a topic that they've literally made movies about. So, you know, there's movies out there that show probably the worst ways in which to host a holiday party, all the liability that can involved in it. And before the break, we talked a little bit about discrimination claims, but you also mentioned that there's a whole host of different things that employers should be mindful of. And one of the things you mentioned that caught me by surprise was wage and hour concerns. What do you mean when you say that employers should be mindful of wage and hour issues related to a holiday party?
So what I mean with this is it's the question of whether the employer has to pay employees for the time they're spending at the holiday party. So before we were talking about, you know, well, this is an event that I'm throwing out of, you know, wanting to be generous, wanting to give my employees a fun time. Why would I need to pay them to attend? But there is risk here. And it really turns on whether the event is considered voluntary or not. This is a little more nuanced also than just saying that the event is voluntary. It's really about the employee's perception of the event and how they feel the event actually is. So whether there's a really, really strong encouragement for employees to attend, if that is so strong that it makes the event less voluntary, then potentially this could be the type of event where we need to pay employees for their attendance there.
In my mind, I picture how people listen to or ingest our content. And I always picture people driving their car or running on the treadmill. And in my mind, someone just said, hold on a second, you're telling me that I now have to pay people to come to my party. I just want to make sure that I'm understanding that correctly, because I'm sure that some of our listeners are saying the same thing. So just to be clear, in some situations, Liz, not only do I host a party that I don't have to host, but I also may have to pay my employees to come to the party?
That's correct. And so specifically here, though, we're talking about our non-exempt employees, right? Because those are the people whose hours we're tracking. We're tracking the amount of time they're spending working. So exempt employees are going to be all set because they're already paid for all of the hours that make up their work week with their salary, right? But yes, those non-exempt employees, if this event is not a voluntary event, and again, this is a sort of a legal term of art almost when we're talking about work events. If it's not voluntary, then yes, if it's not voluntary, you would pay your employees to attend.
Okay.
But that's, yeah, it's something to be aware of when you're planning and especially when you're marketing the event to your employees.
Okay. So I think that, so for my hourly non-exempt employees, there is a potential hypothetical scenario where I host a party and I have to pay my employees to attend it. If I feel very strongly that I do not want to pay my employees to attend it. You mentioned that like I should be mindful of the invitation and the marketing of it. What types of words or phrases or marketing would you suggest that I include in order to limit the possibility that I'm going to have to pay people to come to my party? And I know it sounds silly when I say it that way, but I think I'm just so, you know, I think it's so crazy that I'm paying people to come to my party.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I think the key here is to make sure employees know that they are not required to attend, that this is an optional event, that they are not expected to attend or required to go to. A key thing here is going to be making sure your managers and supervisors are on that same page as well, because those might be the people that employees are asking, you know, questions about the party. And if they're, you know, relaying that this is, again, highly encouraged, like, you know, we're sort of expected to go because it's just one of those things that we do as employees, that's going to be an issue in the voluntariness analysis. A couple other things you can do, though, would be to host the party outside of work hours, you know, separate it from the workday, make sure that it's not, you know, sort of flowing right from work into the party itself. Make sure that there's no work being done or even work seemingly being done at the party. You know, even if it's cleanup or takedown, if employees are helping with that, that might be considered work. And that would also lead to this event needing to be or being compensable for employees. So, you know, on the voluntariness aspect, really making sure that this is shown as a, you know, non-mandatory optional event that they can take it or leave it. It's not expected that they attend. There won't be any repercussions if they don't, and they won't, you know, be rewarded if they go other than the good time. These will all be aspects of the consideration.
If when I'm planning the party, I'm thinking about kind of the flow, like if I'm really getting into party planning 101, you know, if I'm going to have some of my senior leaders stand up and make a statement, what should the content of that be? Should it be all thank you so much, or should it include discussions about where we are from a performance standpoint and what the outlook is for the next year? Does the content of what, you know, some of my speakers are doing or saying matter at the party?
Yeah, that's a really great point, Tawny. I would say it does. It does matter. You know, the more work-related issues that we're talking about at the party, are going to make this look like a work event. And if it's more of a work event rather than a party, then that's going to be compensable time. So I would stay away from, you know, looking at our year-end figures, even if it's to celebrate them. Don't go into the analysis at the holiday party. Keep that during the workday. Keep things social and unrelated to work to the extent possible at the party itself.
I know earlier I kind of flippantly said, what happens if I host it at my house? What happens if I host it at my house? Then can I have, you know, the menorah or the nativity scene or whatever it is that I myself kind of celebrate from a holiday tradition standpoint. So from a wage and hour perspective, does it matter if I'm hosting it on site at the office or if it's off site or let's say it's even an hour away from our corporate headquarters?
Sure. So the distinction itself, like with the other issues, doesn't matter. So if it's on site, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily involuntary or a work event. And if it's offsite, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's a voluntary event. But the practical differences that the location has might have an impact on whether it's viewed as voluntary. So, you know, if we have an event at the workplace, say, you know, it's right at the end of the workday, employees are shepherded down to the conference room to enjoy the holiday party. That might blend a little bit into the employee's workday, take the place of other work tasks that they were doing and make it feel like they have to go or should be there, right? But if we have an event that's, you know, maybe it starts an hour after the end of the workday in another part of town or at another venue, that's much more separate from the regular workday and, potentially viewed as less of a part of the workday and more of a voluntary social event.
Let's say that I had a really, really good year and I want to host a holiday party offsite and I want to make it so that it can be an overnight event for people so that they can really kind of let their hair down and really kind of have just this amazing experience. And so the company is going to pay for the hotel room for all of its employees. Each employee gets its own room. There's no sharing, nothing like that. Does that change the pay analysis at all? If I've paid for the hotel room, is there a chance that they could say, okay, now it's not mandatory, or maybe that helps in saying that it's, you know, something where they can or can't accept it?
I don't think it really changes the basic question that you'd ask first about whether this is a voluntary event. I think you'd still go into the same analysis of, are employees feeling like they have to attend? Is this something that they feel they're expected to be there? Going through that analysis to figure out whether the event's voluntary. I will say, though, it's particularly important that you exercise your judgment on this, because if it is not a voluntary event down the road, you know, if somebody has an issue with it and asserts that this wasn't voluntary, required to be there, then we're looking at not just the time spent at the event, but the travel time to get to the event, potentially the time spent at the hotel if they're doing any work there. Well, that would be compensable anyway. But, you know, there's more at risk there if you're doing an event out of town overnight because there's more time involved from the employee's perspective.
So if we did a holiday party on Friday night and then we had a work retreat Saturday morning at the same place and we paid for the hotel room, that would be a factor that, you know, potentially seems like, okay, maybe the holiday party on Friday night wasn't something that you could miss because you had to be at the retreat the next morning. So, you know, that's all really helpful information and a lot of things I hadn't thought of previously, Liz. So that's really helpful. For those of you who are just joining us today, our guest is attorney Elizabeth Johnston, and we're discussing the holiday office party. We've spent time talking about limiting discrimination claims, and we just finished talking about wage and hour concerns at the holiday party. Liz, another thing that you had mentioned that I was unaware of was potential workers' compensation claims. Is an injury at a holiday party something that workers' compensation would cover?
So maybe. So workers' compensation covers injuries that arise out of or in the course of employment. typically a voluntary work event would not be considered in the scope of the employee's employment to create liability for work-related injuries. But just like with the wage and hour issues, we need to look at whether this is a truly voluntary event, whether there's any work being done, and just the nature of the party in general to figure out if it's taking place within the scope of the employee's employment with the organization. If it is, then workers' compensation liability is going to apply.
Does some of this also depend on what my role is within the organization? Because I mean, in a lot of situations, holiday parties don't just like blossom out of thin air. And we usually don't have the resources to hire a third party party planner, but instead we have members of HR or our administrative team who are, you know, collecting food and beverages or setting up tables and putting out gift bags. Does the role that you play at the party, does that play is that a factor, I guess, in determining whether or not there may be coverage for an injury?
Absolutely. So that goes to the question of whether work is being done, right? So if you are a member of the HR team and your job is to pass out name tags or work on the food table or something like that, even though they're not necessarily your normal duties, you're still working for the company on behalf of the organization. And so an injury that occurs in that context or at the event could definitely be considered work-related potentially, based on the work that's being performed by you.
Is there a way that a company could decrease the likelihood of injury? Or, you know, I'd like to say decrease the likelihood of injury, because I think ultimately that would be the bigger goal. We don't want people getting hurt at holiday parties, but even more so, maybe, and I guess here's the question, do you also want to try to decrease the likelihood that it would be covered by workers' comp? So if it wasn't covered by workers' comp, would you have liability if someone were injured at your event, even if it wasn't workers' comp covered?
Well, you would, yeah. So let's talk about workers' comp first. To eliminate to reduce the likelihood that you're going to have a workers' compensation covered injury, you know, going back to separating the event from work, make this a voluntary event, make sure that no work is being performed inadvertently by those who aren't supposed to be performing it. One way to potentially limit liability here is to just be very clear with individuals working at the event and not working at the event about what the scope of their responsibilities are at the event, so that somebody is not doing work when they're not supposed to and then getting that coverage. But even if an event isn't covered by workers' compensation, an employer could definitely be liable if there's an injury or something that happens that results in injury to employees, because ultimately it is an employer's responsibility to focus on the safety of their employees. And this is still an employer-hosted event. So liability potential is definitely there.
Well, with that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOV 100.5 FM and WLOVradio.com. We'll be right back.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
At over 150 years old, Verrill has an illustrious history with more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill as one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact Verrill at verrill-law.com. That's verrill-law.com.
Hi, I'm Susan McVetti.
And I'm Pete McVetti from McVetti's Hearth and Home.
Is there a sale going on at the store right now?
No.
No Hearthstone, Quadrifier, Mendota, Wittes, Blaze King, or Morso sale?
No.
No Yodel, Vermont Castings, or Regency? Oh, there's always a Regency sale.
No.
You're telling me that out of the gazillions of wood, gas, and pellet stoves that we carry, there's not a single sale going on?
Nope.
Wow, what about patio furniture, awnings, grills, smokers, and aluminum docks?
No, just because there isn't a big sale going on doesn't mean that we're not having great deals and still doing free estimates for anyone needing a heating appliance.
Oh, well, good. Just let me know when we're having another sale.
Okay, there's always a bargain to be had if you are looking for one. And we don't need a new heating appliance.
Well, maybe my sister needs one, or my friend, or your sister.
Stop by McVetty's Hearth and Home at 893 Route 1 in Yarmouth, or check out our website at stovesofmaine.com for the latest information, including our sales.
Really? I have to check out the website? Really? And I can't believe Regency isn't having a sale.
It's 6:42 p.m. Time for Steve Plato and his son Dylan to do the dishes. They talk about everything from the yuckiness of girls to the awesomeness of his soccer team. Sometimes they don't talk at all. Then, hey! The dreaded splash fight. It's dad o'clock, and it's the best time of the day. Because the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Verrill, and today our guest is attorney Elizabeth Johnston, labor and employment attorney at Verrill, and we're discussing the infamous work party and ways in which employers can offer employees a good time without opening themselves up for liability at every turn. You know, it's interesting, Liz, because in my mind, there's this like liability hat, and then there's my party hat. And I really wish that they were like interchangeable, like some of the accessories on these hats were interchangeable. But I feel like the more you and I talk, the more difficult it's going to be for me to put my party hat on, because my liability hat's going to be on. And I really think that one of the things our listeners have been thinking about is, Tawny, there is an elephant in the room. When are you going to ask Liz about alcohol? And you know what? Maybe I'll say alcohol, and for those states in which it's legal, recreational marijuana. So let's like take both of those topics. So oftentimes, I think with alcohol, we see increases in harassment claims, or even if that's not a fact, it's the perception of human resources. I don't know if we have any data or information to show that that's the same when we're dealing with recreational marijuana, but I think more so the perception with harassment. So first, if we're thinking about kind of alcohol generally and parties, what are some ways in which we could decrease harassment claims?
So I think the best thing that we can do here is to mitigate harassment in the first place. And that's a year-round endeavor. So my go-tos here as first steps are going to be policies and training. So, you know, before we're having an event, just as part of your you know, HR hygiene, make sure that your anti-harassment policies are up to date and that are engaging in training efforts throughout the year. And that way employees and managers will have an understanding of what harassment is, what it looks like, why it's unacceptable. You know, not just sexual harassment, but also harassment based on other protected characteristics. You know, those lessons that we teach employees and managers during the year are going to carry through to our holiday season as well. And also because they'll be part of your company's culture. It's not just something we focus on at the holiday party. It's something that we focus on year round. You know, it's definitely tricky because people are letting their hair down. Alcohol can make that, can impair the judgment of people a little bit. So I think it's really important to get those lessons ingrained throughout the year and not just on that one night.
I think that is a really, really important thing, you know, Liz, that you've just brought up. And it makes me kind of think about a recent training that I went to on psychological safety at work and creating a safe place kind of for your employees to feel as though from a psychological standpoint that they're safe. And that's not going to be like, hey, you're safe at this party. But recognizing that throughout the year, whether or not people's party hats are on or off, that this is a safe space. So thank you. Thank you so much for that point, because I do think it's really important. You know, if we have gone through that kind of training, if we make sure that it is a big part of who we are as an organization, and we decide to have alcohol at a function, okay, because we trust that our employees understand what appropriate behavior and inappropriate behavior is. If we have alcohol at the function, what are some things that we should consider once we've made that decision?
Sure. So there's definitely a lot to consider here. One thing that I would say first is to make sure that your employees, you know, we talked about policies and training. One thing I'd add to that is making sure employees know that those policies apply to functions outside of the workday. So they don't turn off, they don't go away just because we're at a voluntary work event or a social event that work's putting on. So making sure that that message is clear and that those expectations are there despite the presence of alcohol. Another thing that you could consider doing is creating an alcohol policy or having one of those in place. And that could set forth your expectations about responsible alcohol consumption at events. And also, you know, if something does come up and there is disciplinary action needed down the line, it could be supportive in any decisions that needed to be made there. A few other things I'd think about are sort of the more practical realities of what an event with alcohol looks like. So I would want, or I would advise organizations to have some individuals there who are in leadership that are not drinking alcohol, so they can be resources for employees if there's something that comes up, you know, whether it be just a party planning detail or a discrimination or harassment report. You want to have somebody there who's responsible and can be a decision maker in those situations. And lastly, another thing I'd think about is how your employees will fare after the event's over, specifically with driving home. You know, as an employer, you're hosting a party, you think, well, people leave, it's not my issue anymore what happens after that, but it can be. And, you know, both legally and just from a good party planning perspective, helping employees find a way home at the end of the night, whether it be calling them a cab or paying for an Uber or something like that, can be something that is very helpful in avoiding risk and also just helping employees get home safe.
So, you know, you mentioned getting home safe, and I think that is a really important point. Is there risk or exposure if you have an employee who does get in the car after having too many drinks and there's an accident that results in injury to others? We talked a little bit, you know, already about injury to self and workers' comp potentially, but what happens if one of our employees after leaving a party is in an accident and there's liability or there's unfortunately injury to a third party? Could there be liability for the company?
Yes, there definitely can be. There's actually a case in California a few years back where an employee attended a holiday party, got intoxicated, drove home, and was in a motor vehicle accident where the other driver passed away, unfortunately. So the issue in litigation later was whether the employer can potentially be liable because they hosted the party, they provided the alcohol. And the answer was yes. Even though this was a voluntary event, the court looked at how the company created a risk by letting the employee get intoxicated. Certain mitigating factors like limiting drinks or having food, weren't necessarily there. So in that case, the employer was liable for that accident. And it really will be a factual assessment if situations like that happen. But taking those steps to avoid those issues and also mitigate risk of overconsumption of alcohol can be helpful in mitigating that risk.
That all makes sense. And I think a really good point there, too, is having food available, you know, having an open bar but not having food is a recipe for disaster, potentially, for your employees. So if I am a listener, I'm thinking to myself, Tani, you know, your show is supposed to give me like solutions and you're giving me a lot of problems here. Is one of the solutions here, Liz, that if an employee wants to attend a holiday party, that they sign a waiver that releases the company from all claims before they go to the work event? I mean, can I have employees waive these claims so that everyone can attend the party and I'm not sitting there in the corner anxious that I'm about to be sued?
Oh, it's a very creative idea, but the answer is no, unfortunately. The reason that we can't do that is because employees can't waive their rights to claims on things that haven't happened yet. So an employee can't sign a waiver promising that they won't, you know, sue for harassment that may happen at a holiday party. And something does happen later, you know, that waiver won't be effective.
So now we've talked about harassment claims. We have talked about discrimination claims. We have talked about workers' compensation claims. We've talked about wage and hour claims. And do you think we should still have a party, even though we have all of these different potential areas of exposure or liability? And that's just from our own employees. You've also told me we potentially have like liability from non-employees after an employee leaves the event. But is there still value in a holiday party list?
Absolutely. Holiday parties can be great morale boosters. You know, people look forward to the holidays throughout the year, and holiday parties are part of the festivities of the season and a great foray into the winter months too. So I think there's so much value in having those parties from an employee morale perspective. And morale can have an impact on so many aspects of employment, you know, from retention to productivity, you know, all of those bottom line issues can be affected by morale, and holiday parties can be an effective tool for increasing it.
Really good points. Really good points. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBradio.com. We'll be right back.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
Car is a wreck and you don't know where to go.
Take it to Moody's.
You wanna get on with your life, get on with the show.
Take it to Moody's.
Good people you can trust
and it won't be a fuss. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
M-O-O-D-Y. Your kid was talking on the cell phone, drove right through your own home, sitting in the parking lot, maybe you get hit a lot, driving through the green light, suddenly your side swipe, put it in reverse, but it turned out that it was first.
Take it to Moody's. Take it to Moody's. Collision Centers.
In today's highly regulated climate, customized HR solutions are needed more than ever. Career Management Associates can partner with your existing HR department for projects or even serve as your outsourced HR team. From compliance and compensation to investigations and employee relations, CMA provides you trusted HR solutions. Call 207-780-1125 or visit cmacareer.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Beryl-Law.com. I'm Tawny Alvarez, your host from Beryl. And today, our guest is Elizabeth Johnston, labor and employment attorney at Beryl. And today, we're discussing that infamous work party. We've been wearing our party hats throughout the course of the last hour, but we've also been talking about ways in which employers can offer employees a good time, have a morale boost, as Liz has mentioned, but also not open themselves up to liability. Because I feel like at every turn, every balloon that we put up on the wall, every streamer that we hang, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, How much exposure is there here? Could somebody strangle themselves with the streamer? And if so, am I to blame? Or what if Sally tries to strangle Rob with the streamer? What's going to happen then? You know, my mind right now is in all the liability and in all the places for risk. But Liz, if you could give our listeners one piece of advice as to how to have a safe, happy, morale-boosting holiday party that limits potential claims against the company, but also provides all that joy that we know can be present at a holiday party, what would that advice be?
So my advice would be to plan ahead. And I think that planning ahead will touch on everything that we've talked about today. So if you're still listening at this point, you are already doing a great job of planning ahead. You're thinking about what the risks are. You're thinking about what to consider when you're planning the party. So that's a great first step. But planning ahead with things like decorations is important too. You know, we don't want to send somebody out at the last minute to get them and find that there's only, religious themed streamers left at the party store, you know, and that creates potential issues for us. You know, plan ahead on the party invitation. Make sure that somebody is looking over it, a couple sets of eyes maybe, to make sure that the messaging is on track, to avoid this being considered a voluntary event. Have time to get your policies in place and make sure your employees know about your policies for anti-harassment, for alcohol, before the event. So having those things laid out well in advance will help mitigate risk, like we talked about. Planning ahead for things like employee transportation, that can help make things run smoothly and also potentially reduce liability for accidents after the event. Planning ahead for who's going to be in charge of the party, who's taking on what tasks. That will help mitigate wage and hour risks, because we won't be asking people last minute to help with getting drinks set up or cleaning up after the event, because that could potentially make those hours compensable time. So getting all of your ducks in a row in advance of the party is going to be huge in making sure that this is just a lot of fun and not a potential liability down the road.
In the course of Liz's answer, there becomes this one point where I just start laughing at her. And it's hard because she's probably thinking, Tawny, do I have something stuck on my face? But in part, her answer, all I could think about was, if you're a fan of The Office, every single Michael Scott holiday party and the party planning committee. So if you want to plan ahead, one of the things I would definitely recommend is watching The Office. You could do it on YouTube, kind of just type in The Office Party Planning Committee and you could see a couple of the clips. And I would recommend doing the exact opposite of what they do in every single episode. But everything Liz just mentioned will bring you to a laughing moment within The Office and their time in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So Liz, with that, as I know I'm giggling internally, and I hope some of our listeners are as well, thank you so much for all of this really, really helpful information. I think that there's a lot of places where there's risk and potential liability that I didn't think of before, and you've really helped me to very clearly understand those things. So thanks so much, Liz.
Thanks so much for having me.
You've been listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM and WLOBRadio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBRadio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.